Welcome to the Over My Dead Body podcast. I'm your host, Alex Lidington Cox. It is March 31st, end of Q1. How are your earnings going? Welcome to the Sit Rep. This is the situation report where we wrap up all the latest dad news, my dad news, and answer some listener questions from the month just gone. Our interview show lands on the 15th, as always. Be sure to check that out. But for now, let's get into the Sit Rep.
Ray, the battalion commander, offered no Sit Rep.
Sit Rep.
Sit Rep. It's all broken.
It's all broken. In industrial relations news.
Smithers, I'm beginning to think that Homer Simpson was not the brilliant tactician I thought he was.
New dad leave rules came into force in England, Scotland and Wales this month, which has one of the stingiest schemes in the world at £185 per week for a fortnight. But the new rules were mostly to do with just making the scheme more flexible. There was no extra funding. Meanwhile, according to The Economist, many EU countries are reducing generous mat leave to better fund paternity leave. Elsewhere, Japan said it would require companies with 100 employees to set and disclose paternity leave targets by 2025. Questions have also been raised about South Korean paternity leave rates, given the country has one of the most generous schemes in the world, but some of the lowest uptake. And finally, research from the University of South Australia has reinforced the extent to which parents are discriminated against when they return to the office, or even before then. Concerning numbers of respondents reported levels of workplace discrimination during their transition to parenthood, 53% were not informed about changes to the workplace that impacted them, 44% missed out on training and promotion opportunities, and 22% were made redundant, restructured out of their job, or didn't have their contract renewed. That is obscene, but hardly surprising. In 80-year worries about the world we've brought our kid into...
I don't understand what the fucking news is. It's just like, hey, here's a bunch of shit you can't fix that happened that was horrible.
American kids are 50% more likely to question whether life has purpose than 20 years ago, which billionaire Larry Fink says is the most concerning statistic he's ever seen. Fink is the founder of the world's biggest money manager, BlackRock, which has $9 trillion US dollars under management. That is the equivalent of the third and fourth largest economies combined, Germany and Japan. Quote, I've been working in finance for almost 50 years, said Fink in a letter to shareholders. I've seen a lot of numbers, but no single data point has ever concerned me more than this one. The lack of hope worries me as a CEO. It worries me as a grandfather, but most of all, it worries me as an American, unquote. That is such an American thing to say, but whatever. Clouds are darkening around net zero. Global oil and gas company bosses gathered at the industry's annual CERA conference in Houston to deride the unrealistic pace of the energy transition away from fossil fuels that was visibly failing. It was the tone that I didn't quite like. They were quite boastful about it. I can tell you right now, I work with energy companies and this sentiment is very much reflected privately. Clean energy projects aren't being approved fast enough. Grids are clogged with solar and overregulated. Private capital can't make a dollar. Eventually, this is my opinion, governments are going to have to step in with much, much, much more money than is currently on the table. Meanwhile, the gap between oil demand forecasts of OPEC, the oil cartel, and the International Energy Agency are further apart than they have been for the last 16 years. This is according to Reuters. Now, this might sound whatever, but the gap reflects, quote, fundamental competing worldviews about the pace of the energy transition and possibly competing self-fulfilling prophecies, unquote. Now, if you want a crash course in whether to be pessimistic or optimistic about the transition, check out Michael Liebrich's two-part series for Bloomberg New Energy Finance. It's called Net Zero Will Be Harder Than You Think and Easier. And the reason why I'm alerting you to this is because the easier part just came out. Elsewhere, tens of thousands of Russians protested during the latest rubber stamp election for Vladimir Putin. Mr. Putin allocated himself 87% of the vote. America, Britain, and the EU condemned the result. It is worth noting, for the world that we're bringing our children into, that China, Iran, India, and North Korea all congratulated him. Meanwhile, even if Trump is elected, which is a disastrous prospect, there's a chance it won't be as bad. The Senate is almost certain to flip Republican under a Trump victory, but the House is so evenly poised and so ridden with chaos that there's quite a strong chance that the Democrats could pick it up, which would put a halt on some of Trump's worst instincts. So that's a positive. In education news,
it's called the Career Aptitude Normalizing Test, or CANT.
High school students are being asked absurd and badly worded questions in NAPLAM's numeracy exams. That's Australia's, like, you know, standardized testing system. But a lack of transparency for National Testing Authority is preventing teachers from addressing the issues. This is a global problem.
In 3 days of extensive standardized testing. Mm-hmm.
And what are the consequences of the standardized testing?
Well, the way I understand it, if the school's kids don't test well, they burn the school down. So it's pretty high pressure.
A lot of pressure on the kids.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the tests are written by people that nobody knows who they are. It's very secretive. Mm-hmm. And then I look at the problems and it's like, you know, Bill has 3 goldfish. He buys 2 more. How many dogs live in London? Or something like that.
Standardized testing might be a prick of a thing, but according to PISA results, which is the global standard, students in Wales perform as well as disadvantaged students in England. That is fucked. And more from Newington College. The Newington College Alumni Union president has been voted out of his position. I mean, the continuing fracas of the school's decision to admit girls. Now, you might remember this is a really rich private school in Sydney, and they've shifted away from an all-boys, you know, curriculum set up, whatever. They're moving from an all-boys to a co-ed school. And I have been to a school that's been through this process, and this is a really interesting PS to the story. You might remember when we first brought it up, it's got nothing to do with wokeness or all the stuff that the all-boys are complaining about. It's got everything to do with business. Parents don't want to send their kids to single-sex schools anymore, at least not in the numbers to sustain the current market. So that's why you've got these co-ed schools, particularly all-boys schools, which have the worst reputations, moving to a co-ed environment. To illustrate the point, I went to a school in the southeast suburbs of Melbourne. They went co-ed in the mid-90s. There was an all-girls school just up the road. They have just been absorbed by the co-ed school. But here's the PS to it. Kids are always so much more adaptable than parents. Parents are such fucking assholes. So the school itself that I went to adapted really well to the change. It happened really quite quickly and really quite successfully. The old boys network, which is half the reason why you send kids to a private school, never accepted the new girls coming in as graduates of the school. And it took, I'm telling you, decades for that shit to be weeded out of the old boys network as it became an old boys and girls network. In science news.
Well, the real humans won't burn quite so fast in there. Hi.
Hi. Researchers in Taiwan have shed light on the lasting impact of a miscarriage on fathers during subsequent pregnancies. The study, published in the Journal of Affective Disorders, indicated fathers whose partners had experienced a miscarriage experienced lower levels of happiness and higher levels of anxiety and depression. The researchers said the study highlighted the importance of interventions aimed at preventing adverse consequences among these individuals.
We need the outlet for our rock tumbler.
Plug it in! Plug it in!
What, the rock tumbler or the TV?
Parents should be concerned about screen time, but it's the content that should factor in as much as the calculations about time, according to researchers. The subject was dealt with in the Debunks podcast featuring Cosmos journalist Jacinta Bowler, with experts from organisations including the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne and Australian Catholic University. Research from Pew says the vast majority of dads feel proud when they think about their children, but are more likely to report a disconnect with their children than mothers. According to the research, the majority of parents report being involved in the day-to-day lives of their children, but fathers trail mothers 33% to 70. Meanwhile, 33% of dads say they're less involved in their child's life than they'd like to be, compared to 22% of mums. Or moms, because this is a US report. Speaking of gender divide, The Economist has run a piece talking about the diverging political views of young men and women. Women are continuing the trend of leaning left, like younger generations past, but young men are increasingly swinging right, and the trend is observable across large swaths of the developed world. Now, why is this important? Well, we're in the business of being dads. If the sexes don't get along, we'll have less dads total and more unhappy dads. If we've got a generation of conservative dads coming through, that means it'll be harder to secure better paternity leave because we all need to row in the same direction. And as a father of young girls, you know, there are times where I just think, God, thank God I didn't have boys, because it looks like boys just have so many problems now. But that is a problem delayed, not a problem solved, because the odds are that one, if not both of my girls, is going to fall in love with one of these guys. And if they're an Andrew Tate-loving dude, that is not a good result either. So I don't know. We need to have a discussion about boys. They're getting left behind in basically across the developed world when it comes to academic results. And the level of concern raised for that seems to be low. That would be my sense of it.
I keep hearing this horrible irregular thumping noise.
It's your heart, and I think it's on its last thump.
Woo! I was afraid it was my transmission.
Hey, where's he going?
Billy, remember that old Plymouth we just couldn't fix?
We're gonna sell him to Mr. Nicopopoulos?
You're a dull boy, Billy.
Finally, The Atlantic has made the argument that dad culture has little to do with raising children. I'm just gonna read you the opening paragraph of this, and keep in mind it's America. Americans spend a fair amount of time describing things as dad. Dad rock is guitar-driven music, typically from the time of Nixon or Ford administration, with bonus points for extended drum solos or albums that feature double gatefold illustrations of imaginary planets. Dad core is the art of clothing yourself without wasting any energy thinking about fashion. Dad friends are kind and endearing, but not necessarily the most fun at parties. A dad bod is desirable, but poised on the brink of middle-aged sprawl. Dad energy involves being goofy and acting like a 40-something guy, whether or not you actually are a 40-something guy. Dad jokes are mostly terrible puns. These phrases all paint a picture of someone who is uncool, modestly embarrassing, and blissfully unconcerned with others' judgments. But they have something else in common. They bear little relationship to the actual work of raising children. The mum descriptor, or mom, typically gestures at being harried, classic mum brain, or nurturing, like mum friend. Meanwhile, dad as an adjective hints at someone shorn of all responsibilities. I just want to push back on that. I think that that is a really simplistic reading. Let's start off with who a dad bod belongs to. It belongs to a father who is prioritizing his family over his health. What's dad energy? It's being a dad, ensuring kids don't take themselves too seriously, as opposed to the 1980s when dad energy was all about discipline. I just find that this reading of it, that everything that dads do is devoid of responsibility and everything that moms do is like laden with responsibility. Like dad energy, like I remember there was this terrible think piece in The Conversation called The Dark Side of Bandit. They selected this episode where Bandit was embarrassed to be impersonating a whale at the playground in order to entertain his children. And the reason why I was annoyed they selected that is so out of character for him. What Bandit does in private and public is make sure that his girls are never self-conscious. That's what he is always willing to do. He's always willing to make an absolute ass of himself in public in front of his girls to communicate to themselves, don't take yourself too seriously, which is a really important message for girls to receive. That is a skill that dads seem to have in spades, and it is undervalued. Everyone thinks like, oh, this is just a dad having fun with parenthood. He doesn't have any responsibility. No, this is a strategic behavioral decision that we're making with our kids to make sure that they don't take themselves too seriously. So thanks for the attempt, but I think this article has some major flaws. In celebrity dad news,
Channel 6's own Krusty the Clown has gathered members of the entertainment community who normally steer clear of fashionable causes for a video called We're Sending Our Love Down the Well.
Down that well!
Kelly Slater, 52, has hinted that he might finally be on the brink of retirement because he has a young child at home. This is, I find, a little bit amusing because I remember in grade 6, we had to watch a news bulletin and then recall what was communicated in the news bulletin. And I confused Kelly Slater with a female athlete. Like, they asked who was the female skier, and I said Kelly Slater, and everyone laughed because I didn't know anything about surfing, and everyone in the class knew that Kelly Slater was the biggest fucking thing. That happened 27 years ago, and he is thinking about retirement. That's insane. Academy Award-nominated actor and director Bradley Cooper has admitted he didn't bond with his daughter much in the first few months of her life.
I remember the first time I realized, because everyone's like, I would die in a second for my kid. I'm always like, if I'm being honest, I don't know. Like the first 8 months, I'm like, I don't even know if I really love the kid.
We don't know her yet.
It's dope. It's cool. I'm watching this thing morph. And then all of a sudden.
I love that honesty, by the way.
That's my experience.
That's a lot of people's, I think, and they're afraid to say that.
I mean, my experience was totally that. Fascinated by it. Love taking care of it. Would I die if someone came in with a gun? It's only a couple of months. I don't know. I
got she just arrived. Yeah. She hasn't even had any drinks.
I'm not committed yet.
Love that. Thanks for sharing, Bradley. Very common. As you clearly found out, it doesn't last once you keep doing the work. Meanwhile, Hilary Duff's husband, Matthew Comer, got a vasectomy while the actress was pregnant with their third trial. Up the Duff no more. Couldn't resist. And finally, current world number four tennis player Daniil Medvedev has spoken of finding balance in fatherhood on the road ahead of a tournament in Miami. Now, I don't have anything else to say on that, only that Medvedev, who is as charming as you would expect a Russian to be.
Bro, are you stupid? Look at me! I'm talking to you!
What do you want?
To give him torture because his father is talking at me.
But I'm telling you right now, he has the most infuriating game on the tour right now. His forehand is the ugliest forehand I've ever seen in my life. It looks like a terrible slap. He droops his wrist on the backswing, shows us the back of his racket, which every coach tells you is just an absolute no-no. And he returns the ball from a mile behind the baseline. It is atrocious to watch. And the reason why it frustrates me, I know this is completely off topic, but he has a small man's game in a big man's body. Now, what do I mean by that? For generations, tennis has been this basic bargain. If you are tall and you can develop a good serve and good ground strokes, you have a big man's game. You hit the hell out of the ball. You stand up to the baseline. You bully people. If you're short, like Bobby Riggs or Leighton Hewitt, you scramble, you scrap, you stand back, and you fetch every ball and you outwork your opponent. That is the way tennis has been played for ages. But because they've slowed the court speed down so much, it has given an advantage to the little guy, to the defensively minded player. So we see these absurd situations where big guys who should be able to bully the court are standing almost where the line judge used to stand until AI replaced them and just waiting for the ball to slow down and then hitting the shit out of it and landing it on their opponent's toes on the baseline. It takes the balance of power away from the server, which at the start of the point, and it means that a lot of the time when someone is serving, it's just a coin toss as to who's going to win this. And it irritates the shit out of me watching it. If you want to see how a player with Medvedev's physical gifts should play, the guy's almost 6'5", go and watch fellow compatriot Murat Safin. That guy beat peak Federer on the way to winning the Australian Open in 2005. The highlights are on YouTube. That match is fucking extraordinary. Federer didn't play badly. He played really well. Safin was just better on the day. All right, street-level dad news.
This was the 80s, man. There were no helmets.
According to data from Spotify, 29% of Australian fathers classify themselves as Swifty dads. Unfortunately, this is one of them.
In preparing for this day, Abby and Lily suggested that I should play a type of Taylor Swift bingo. And they said, by trying to work the names of every single Taylor Swift album into my remarks. Well, what's a dad to do? It is true that my political opponents have often made me see red. Often when subjected to the tortured poets who would rise to attack my reputation. In response, I always thought it important to be fearless and speak now, or forever hold my silence and allow those attacks to become folklore. Ever since leaving university in 1989, this has always been my approach. My great consolation has always been my lover, Jen, who has always been there for me whenever I need her from dawn and beyond the many midnights we have shared together. See, I'm actually a true numeromantic, after all. And I can assure you there is no bad blood, as I've always been someone who's been able to shake it off.
That was former Prime Minister and card-carrying creep Scott Morrison giving his final address to Parliament. While his membership in Team Swifty Dad is disappointing, I don't remember Spice Girl dads in the 90s, so this does feel like progressive kind. Speaking of Spice Girls, the blow up at Red Bull is something else. Now, for those that don't know, CEO and teen principal Christian Horner, who's married to Ginger Spice, was embroiled in a workplace harassment case that pointed to an alleged affair with a colleague. He has since been cleared, but not satisfied. Max Verstappen's dad, Voss, who lives vicariously through his son, has destabilized the entire team, dropping many hints that he has an apparent moral objection to Horner's behavior and would pull his son out of the team. Now, everybody knows that Voss just doesn't like Christian Horner and Voss likes control. What about Max in this situation? What does he think? It's like, Voss, you're not driving. Your son's 26 and more talented than you. Get your hand off the fucking wheel. This is like watching the tennis tour. Now, listeners in Australia might be familiar with, let me say, a particularly large healthcare chain on every street in Australia. Now, I've come to understand that the family that owns that enormous healthcare chain is headed by a patriarch that has said this to his children. You can be anything you want after you become a pharmacist, because you can't own a pharmacy without a pharmaceutical degree. It's a protective regulation. And then he said to his kids, you can be anything you want after you get a law degree to help us grow the business. Rich man, shit dad. Meanwhile, in Argentina, a man has gone into hospital for gallbladder surgery and emerged with a vasectomy. How the fuck does that happen? Furious Jose Basse claimed medics at the Florencio Diaz Hospital in Cordoba, Argentina, made a monumental mix-up when he was expecting to undergo an operation on his abdomen. Instead, they cut the cord to his balls. Fuck me. And oddly enough, researchers in America have discovered that vasectomies spike during March Madness, which is the college basketball tournament, because men have realized that bed rest is best timed with wall-to-wall sports coverage. Absolute genius. Why didn't I think of that? In entertainment...
Do you guys have kids? How many? Two kids?
Two kids, two dogs.
How old are the kids?
16 and 14.
16 and 14, both boys?
Girl, boy.
Which one's the older?
Girl.
What's it like? Is she ugly? Let's hope, right? I'm talking to you, Dad. You know you hope she's ugly.
She's an asshole.
She's an asshole? So who cares what she does?
We were at dinner last night.
Oh, Christ.
And a table full of, like, her friends from high school were talking about her, and they said, she's full-ass fucking retarded. And I'm like, all right, I'm okay.
And your thought wasn't, let me go clear house over there. Tell all these girls about their fupas and whatever else to make them feel shitty about themselves. You were like, right? Thank you. Your daughter's going to come like, hey, guys. You're going to be like, shh.
That's Big Jay Oakerson, funny as fuck, wearing a tall hoodie. I saw him do stand-up at the Comedy Cellar a bunch of times when I was living in New York. He's absolutely hilarious. I'm going to try to weave some more comedian parenting content into this. Staying in entertainment, The Economist has run a piece on the success of The Gruffalo. I had no idea this book was first published 25 years ago, but it is now a global phenomenon. Well done to the publishers and the marketers. The Yale Review has argued that Steven Spielberg is the auteur of fatherhood. I guess that's true. The Bluey special, The Sign, that I mentioned last month, is set to premiere on April 14 on Disney. And something wonderful to leave you with. A man in Ohio has been arrested after growing frustrated at the level of homework his child's school was assigning. Adam Sizemore is accused of repeatedly calling his child's school to complain about the amount of homework, according to Oxford Police. Criminal complaints filed against Sizemore claim he threatened the school principal, saying he, quote, better put your big boy pants on, unquote. When the school stopped answering Sizemore's calls, police say he started calling their department. I wonder if he's related to actor Tom Sizemore. You might remember him from Saving Private Ryan. That guy's cocaine addiction was so out of control that director Steven Spielberg, apparently the auteur of fatherhood, made this deal with him. You are going to be drug tested every day. If you fail one test, I don't care if it's on the last day of your shooting, I will reshoot all your scenes and cut you out of the movie. Kind of scary, but at the same time, you'd be like, fuck, Spielberg really wants me for this job. All right, now it's time for my set rep.
Mr. Hutz, why are you burning all your personal papers?
As of this moment, Lionel Hutz no longer exists.
Say hello to Miguel Sanchez.
Each month you get to hear the everyday day-to-day dad concerns of what your host is dealing with. The kids, Beatrix and I went to Sydney together for a work trip for a couple of days, which was absolutely lovely. I didn't get a whole lot of work done, but it was a great excuse to be able to get out of some work conversations that I didn't want to go for. And at the end of the day, I just needed to go up and shake hands with a couple of people. Rachel took Hazel to New Zealand on the first sort of one-on-one trip. And all round, I would consider the whole thing a success. This is something that I find a lot of fathers whose partners live, you know, not in the city that they're living, deal with a lot. It is the opportunity to get one-on-one time, and that is best presented by one parent taking one of the children over to see the grandparents. Daycare drama. Oh my God. WhatsApp groups for daycares are just the worst place in the world. So there was no gastro outbreak at our daycare, but we had parents hyperventilating on the WhatsApp group that gastro was not being taken seriously. And it was also revealed in this WhatsApp group that parents had not been reporting their own symptoms. And one parent started trying to rally the troops and saying, like, we need to report the daycare center to the Department of Health. And I think she might have actually done it, which I just find absurd. I mean, like, community-run daycare centers is where the left just goes to die, because you see all of these people who outwardly are very sophisticated, well-talking inner-city lefties, and privately are just demanding customers. You know, they take a customer is always right into a cooperative daycare center. And having sat on the board, my partner sat on the board, I am getting really fucking tired of listening and taking complaints from parents who want the veneer of a community-run daycare center, but actually just want service from a private center. So just shut up and get the fuck out and stop bothering the educators. We had to do, like, the whole center had to do, like, a day-long investigation to determine that there was, in fact, no gastro outbreak. And then you would have parents saying, like, oh, we need better, it'd be great if we had better communication from the daycare center. It's just like, do you want us to tell you every time there isn't a gastro outbreak? We already know. I work in communications. I used to sit on the board. I know you don't read 80% of the stuff we send you. If we add to that, that is just more stuff you are not going to read and critical stuff you will miss. So just do me a favor, volunteer for the board, put yourself in that position of running a daycare center in your spare time. And by the way, my family works full time too, before you complain that you're already too busy, and then we'll have a discussion. But I've done the hard work. You haven't, so shut the fuck up. Oh, God. And it's just like, I read this story about violence against teachers from students and abuse from parents and shit wages. And, you know, the story was just asking, like, why would you become a teacher? And I know parents are worried about the future of their kids. Well, you need to understand that the education professionals that are providing this service to your children are an essential stakeholder, not someone for you to be bullying. Ah, dearie me. And the younger of our two, she's 2 months shy of her second birthday, but she is a full-blown two-year-old. Like, we've been feeling this coming for months, but, like, this week it really hit, and we're just like, all right, tape the windows shut. It's a fucking hurricane for the next year to 18 months. Anyway, so that's where we are. Health Patch March. I'm going to be getting my buddy Alex Breeden in on the podcast to talk about going dry for a month. I haven't actually had a drink since February 20, so it's March 30. I didn't drink heading into this because I thought that would make it easier. And it's been quite the month. I'll get into that a little bit later. My LDL cholesterol reading came back at 6.4. It was 6.6. I'd like that to have come down a bit more. The doctor is very reluctant to put me on statins at my age, so we're working on that, but I will reference that a little bit later as well. Ran 120 kilometers this month, really good result, and I got sick twice. That's one of the good things about, I keep like a spreadsheet of all my running, and it acts as a bit of a diary, and I find that that can be really useful in reflecting on, like, when my exercise is going up or down, I can kind of see why and just go a little bit easier on myself, just be a little bit more forgiving when things start to fall apart. You know, when I go back and look over my running over the last 5 years, there are periods when I just stop running for about a month and it just says depressed for a month. And then I come out of that and I go, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. You can just be depressed for a month. But if you have that form, it does just, it inspires a little bit of self-reflection and the realization that, oh, you're feeling depressed. You need to go for a run. You'll feel better. Off you go. In finances, rates, I mean, all of the chat about rates going up seems to have ended, thank fucking God, but there's a lot of higher for longer narratives out there. And it's interesting, countries in the EU and Asia seem to be performing better when it comes to inflation. So Australia, by the looks of it, according to some stats that I saw, Australia is struggling about as worse as anyone when it comes to battling inflation. Britain and Canada are not far behind, and America is absolutely crushing it. Their inflation is coming down really quite well. And there are a few factors that might explain the differences. So one is fiscal stimulus during COVID-19. So if you've got more money in the system, it means it's harder to get prices down now that we're dealing with a proper inflation outburst. The booster to demand of core inflation, which strips out energy and, you know, indicates underlying inflationary pressure. You know, Britain is core inflation at close to 5%. You know, Australia is sitting at 3.8%. And there's a lot of Asian and continental European nations that are sitting below that, and they didn't spend as much during COVID-19. So that's probably a reason. Another reason is probably immigration. You know, one of the things about COVID-19 is it made a lot of people think, shit, the world's a really scary place. Where do I want to live? Oh, I want to live in the United States, Britain, and Australia. So that's one of the reasons why those immigration rates have been higher, and that's another reason why demand and inflation in those countries has also been higher. That's a good thing. Like, long term, that's a good thing. This inflation outbreak won't last forever, but the characteristics of the overall attractiveness of the places that we live and breathe and raise our kids, those are lasting. And right now I'm feeling very lucky to live in Australia. Business, looks like I've signed a new client. It's a big one. So that is just going to allow me to relax a bit, at least for the next 4 months. So my $400 budget, it's been really interesting. I haven't been able to spend any money on booze inside or outside the house, and it's been revealing perhaps what I've been spending my money on. So it's been books, movies. I'll get into that in a little bit. Weed gummies via a friend and magnesium bath salts. For whatever reason, those two things really presented themselves as things that I wanted to buy this month. And I'd make two observations there, and just a couple of bits on this. They're all about relaxation. And I was just kind of wondering, like, if I could trade off alcohol and replace that, especially in wintertime, with a weed gummy like every two weekends and magnesium salt baths during the week, let's say two or three of them, I think I could go off booze for quite a bit longer, but we'll see. Our vices, so I had caffeine, paracetamol, codeine because I did have a migraine after coming home from the Sydney trip, which I'm not surprised about, but no booze, no THC, no illicit drugs of any kind. This month was pretty bloody clean. What am I reading or watching? Three Body Problem on Netflix. That show is fucking sick. Although Rachel keeps on asking me, what do you think about the show? Because she's read the book. She knows where this is going. She keeps asking me, like, what do you think is happening? I'm like, I don't fucking know. It's a mystery sci-fi. Like, you know the answer to this question. It's, oh God, like, it's driving me absolutely spare. Saw Dune 2. Oh my God, go and see that fucking movie. See it at the movies. See it at the biggest screen that you can. I'm going to see it again. I'm going to try to see it three times before it goes off, before it goes out of circulation. Saw Shawshank Redemption. It's the 30th anniversary this year. Arguably the greatest male friendship movie of all time. And so it was wonderful to see that on the big screen. Finished Scott Galloway's The Algebra of Happiness. Honestly, not a lot more added in that stuff from the content that he's done on YouTube. Just a lot of quite moving, but ultimately not particularly information-heavy personal essays. And this clip kind of gets to the heart of what he says, at least when it comes to parenthood.
There's all the research comes back that there's an arc of happiness, and that is pretty much until the age of 25, Disneyland, beer, football games, sexual exploration or non-sexual exploration, if you were me until you were 25, you basically, these are great times, right? We're pretty happy. And then about 25 to 45, our happiness dips substantially. And it's what I call the stage in our life of shit gets real, right? You find out you're not gonna have a fragrance named after you, you're not gonna be a senator, and all the expectations and goals that your parents and your colleges told you you're capable of may not be coming as quick as you'd like. And despite that people with children feel more satisfied and are happier at the end of their life that they had children, people without kids are actually happier than people with children. And so if you have kids, you have a lot of stress. You're likely gonna encounter some sort of economic duress during this time. And also someone you love gets sick and dies and it kind of hits you square in the face. So 25 to 45 are, generally speaking, our least happy years. And the advice I give the kids is simple, that when you face adversity or unhappiness in this period in your life, that's a natural part of the cycle, and to keep on keeping on. And then the good news is something in your 50s, maybe earlier if you're soulful, happens, and that is you start taking stock of your blessings. Hopefully you've achieved some of the bigger things in your life. Hopefully you're healthy. Hopefully you have these things that look, smell, and feel like you that get less and less awful every day, called kids. And you realize that life is finite. And you start appreciating things and kind of taking wonder in things you didn't appreciate before, right? Great food, nature, time with friends. You start taking stock of your blessings.
I get great comfort from that. I've got an episode in happiness in mind. If anyone knows any guests, researchers, or experts on happiness that would suit, hit me up. Now I'm reading Pierre Attia, Outlive, The Science and Longevity of Everything. And here's what he said that's kind of interesting. So when it comes to statins, which, you know, have a consequence for my cholesterol, he's pretty proactive. He's just like, why not put someone on statins? You know, let's get the amount of shit in their bloodstream down as early as possible, because all it's going to do is accumulate. It's pretty compelling, because the reason why we don't put someone on statins is if they don't have more than a 5% chance of dying in the next 10 years, we consider it to be counterproductive, like the disadvantages of going on statins that can cause muscle aches, blah, 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 outweigh the benefits. And his argument that doesn't hold water is pretty compelling. So might be that I have a conversation with my doctor about going on statins earlier, because, yeah, my cholesterol is just, it's pretty clear that I'm going to be dealing with elevated cholesterol. I'm just one of those guys for the rest of my life. So I'll have a look at that. He's pretty skeptical about fasting, especially when it comes to maintaining muscle mass. And maintaining muscle mass is he would never say it's a panacea, but he's like, if you want to live a long time, you need to stay strong for longer. So that was pretty cool. Because I don't want to fast. When it comes to exercise, it was actually quite reassuring to know that I'm mostly doing the right things. You know, he emphasizes something known as zone 2 exercises. So I tend to do a long run, interval training, and a bit of muscle work at the moment, because I'm training for a couple of longer runs. I'm probably not doing enough strength work, but it was pretty reassuring. It's like zone 2, which is a long run with a heart rate and a breathing rate where you would be able to say a couple of sentences or have a light conversation if you were running with someone. Interval training, where you just absolutely gas yourself, and then building muscle as much as possible. And that's broadly speaking what I'm doing, but once I'm finished with this sort of era of running, which I expect to only last sort of the next year, my goal is to switch much harder towards building muscle mass and just making sure I'm as strong as possible. What's going on around me? Boy, oh boy, we had a bit of drama on the way to daycare. So we're coming down this bike path that runs next to the Upfield line, which is in the northern area, northern suburbs of Melbourne where I live. And we're about to cross the road at an intersection. So keep in mind, this is a bike path running next to a train line. And we're about to come up to an intersection. This intersection is really busy. There is a gym and pool immediately to our left. And there is a high school and childcare center on the right. So it's pretty busy. And this wiry woman in her 50s, who was going really quite quickly, ran into the back of this 12-year-old kid right in front of me in the middle of the road as she was trying to overtake. The kid veered a little bit to the right. Not sure why, but it looked like a dangerous overtake from her, from my perspective. You know, it's an intersection with lights, pedestrians everywhere, kids, people coming out of the gym, blah, blah, blah. And she absolutely cracked the shits at this kid. I mean, insane, totally out of line, a torrent of F words. There are kids everywhere. I'm holding her bike. I'm also trying to, like, I've got Hazel next to me. I'm holding her bike, trying to get it off the road. And she is screaming at this kid, saying, fuck this and fuck that and fuck you. And then his dad comes over, like, trying to defuse the situation. She starts waving a finger at his face like, you need to teach him better. And I was just like, oh, my God, this girl is terrible. So fuck her. So I just got rid of her by put that up against the gym. I get over to the kid. The kid's on the other side of the road, standing still with his bike, and like just not moving, not looking at anything that's going on. I get over him and I just put my hand on his back and I said, hey, mate, are you okay? And he just burst into tears. It was just so heartbreaking. So thankfully, another random person came over and said, I was just telling him, mate, don't worry about her. She is a fucking lunatic. Well, I didn't say fucking lunatic, but I said, she's, even if that wasn't her fault, and I'm not convinced about that, it's incumbent upon her to be the bigger person. She's the adult and she's behaving like a child. Another stranger came over and said basically the exact same thing. Then dad came over and we got out of there. But oh, now every time I'm dropping my daughters off, I'm looking out for that woman because I was just like, that was so fucked up what she did to that kid. Like, even if it had been his fault, you just don't behave that way. And like, if you're on the road and you run into the back of someone, you've got Buckley's chance. That is your fault. And that's what she's done. But she's just like, oh no, like he veered to the right when he shouldn't have. And it's just like, fucking what an asshole, absolute asshole. Couldn't believe it. Anyway, so that was a nice bit of drama. And the positive was that Hazel got to see that when an adult behaves badly, society gave their attention to the kid. And I was like, I thought like the net result of that, I was really happy with my community that day. So that was kind of cool. All right, it's time for listener questions. This one's from Rowan in Australia. It's pretty hard going out there and a lot of dads feel real pressure to be the income earner, keep a happy face on and be the strong one for their kids, their partners, etc. If anything, becoming a dad can reinforce what so many men are taught from a young age. What strategies can dads employ to let their guard down, to open up, to let it out when it needs to get out and not bottle up the pressure they might be feeling? Short answer is no for fathers. The go-to hotlines are Beyond Blue, Men's Health, Lifeline, Sane Australia. There is a support for fathers group where you get to meet up with dads, but I find that that is a bit too confronting. And I often find that when I'm talking to a specific dad and trying to vent, a lot of the time there's some crosswires or they will not be willing to admit that they share the same frustrations. And then you talk to them like 2 or 3 years later and you hear the exact same thing from them. So I find that to be a little bit too confronting. But the short answer is no, there's no father-specific hotline for this stuff. The closest that you'll get is Men's Line Australia. So I would give them a call. But I know exactly what you're talking about. There are, like, men are structurally stuck in our traditional gender roles and the pressure to fulfill that role, while we're also feeling pressure to be progressive dads, and it creates an enormous amount of frustration. I mean, I know that one of the benefits that I have is my partner was very clear with me that she was going to cover our financial obligations when she came back from mat leave to allow me to take pat leave. I don't hear a lot of dads getting that message from their partner, to be frank. I don't hear a lot of dads getting the, hey, I'm going back to work, you better get back into the home, I've got this. Kim, also in Australia, at what age did you start to let your newborn child play with other kids, get exposed to germs, dirt, etc.? Kim's just had his first kid. Congratulations, Kim. On the one hand, we keep getting told that they're very fragile and not vaccinated, so to keep her protected. On the other hand, we don't want to cotton wool her, leading to the development of allergies or underdevelopment of the immune system. Ongoing question. Thank you very much, Kim. So doctors tend to start freaking out less, especially if you've had a kid going into winter after they've got their 6 weeks. Now, you're not in that situation because it's summertime, but at 6 weeks, that's when whooping cough is given. And that's when they start to relax a little bit. But unless you live in Brunswick, which is anti-vax central, I wouldn't have any hesitation with having our baby hang out with another kid from 6 weeks onwards. It's not until they're 6 months old that they really give a shit. Until then, it's mostly for the parents. It's mostly for the, hey, we have a baby. It's fun to stand around with someone else who has a baby because we can talk about how fucked our lives are right now. But, you know, until they're about, when they're 6 months old, that's when they start really getting curious about other kids and have at it. But also, so here was our approach. My parents are anti-vaxxers, and we basically told them, can't see the baby for the first 6 weeks because whooping cough, this time of year, et cetera, et cetera. And 50% of the conversation was basically me saying, I disagree with your vaccination stance. And it ended up being just a lot of pressure. And then when Beatrix was born, we're just like, fuck it, hold her. She gets whooping cough, whatever. Knowing full well that she probably wouldn't. Like, if you're feeling sick, if you're feeling anything, don't hold the baby. But like, that's something that you would extend to everybody. So I think that this is also something that you really think about hardcore when you're on your first kid. And then when you have your second kid, it becomes like, all right, whatever. So yeah, 6 weeks would be, I would keep most kids off limit. And most like people, if they haven't had, if they're unvaccinated or they're feeling a little bit diggy, like 6 weeks, don't let anyone who is risky around your kid. But then after that, you can kind of relax, especially when it's this time of year. It's still pretty warm. All right, that's the third edition of the Sit Rep. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on the last day of April with more dad news, my news, and questions from the audience. If you have any questions, hit us up on the socials, OMDB Podcast, or on email, overmydadbodypodcast@gmail.com. Or if you've got my number, just text me. I know a lot of my audience at this stage. In the meantime, though, my name's Alex Lidington Cox. Have a good one. Yeah.